Alright, it's 7 o'clock and you're listening to WRIR LP 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. Thanks for tuning in. It's time for Music Could Talk, and boy, I have a special show for you today. I was lucky to get an interview with the amazing artist and songwriter Niloufer Yanya, and she's releasing a new album in September 13th on Ninja Tune Records, and I'll play that interview in just a little bit, so stay tuned for that. And thanks again to DJ Doughty. Always great listening to Ambiance Congo and the Motherland Influence and the other black music and all those great shows. Global Agogo, the jazz show with Mr. Jazz. And, you know, all week we have great DJs bringing their own collections and knowledge to the airwaves here. It's awesome. It's awesome to be a part of this station. WRIR, non-commercial, non-profit, independent radio here in Richmond, broadcasting to the whole world and promoting cultural diversity on the airwaves. So thanks for tuning in. I'm going to start with Krungbin and a remix by Quantic. This is from 2022, Pelota.
me convertí en un demonio. Quien tuve buenas amigas, las amigas fue cargada por la ayuda de mi familia. Las amigas fue cargada por la ayuda de mi familia. Maldita, yo puedo ser una pelota.
That was Hermanos Gutierrez with Until We Meet Again, and that's from Sonido Cosmico. And shout out to my mom. Thanks for listening, Mom. That was a song that we were playing on a family trip to the beach this past month, and that whole album really goes well with the ocean breeze and maybe driving also. Kind of has a calming effect. That's Hermanos Gutierrez, Sonido Cosmico, and before that we heard Krongbin with a Quantic Cut a Rug remix of Pelota from the Mordecai Remixes album. Thanks for tuning in. I think we should get this interview started here. Set up an interview through Cosign PR folks. Very nice of them to connect me with Niloufer Yanya. And I was told it was going to be an audio-only interview. But then when Niloufer joined, she had her camera on, and so I turned mine on too. But try not to be nervous when you're interviewing people that you really admire. And I did some editing because the conversation went from what was supposed to be maybe 20 minutes to like an hour. So again, so grateful to Niloufer for speaking with me for such an extended amount of time and trying to answer to the best of her ability all my weird random questions. But we got pretty deep, and I'll let you hear some talking and some music all compiled into a show here featuring Niloufer Yanya. So let's let that roll. This is WIR LP 97.3. I have the honor to speak with Niloufer Yanya today, and I'm so grateful to you for giving me this opportunity to talk to you. How are you doing today?
I'm good too. I'm grateful you want to talk to me.
Cool. You must be super busy right now. A lot going on. Where are you?
I'm in London at home. I'm getting ready for the album release, the tour, rehearsals.
Yeah, all that coming up. So you've got a new album, Method Actor, scheduled for release on September 13th.
Mm-hmm.
And a world tour. You're going to be playing closest to us here in Richmond in DC on September 30th at the Black Cat. I saw that you actually did a couple shows in New York in June. Is that right?
And it was like my label wanted me to do like a showcase. Yeah, I got some fans down from Planet Fans, so people want tickets, but it wasn't like a proper show.
Right, just sort of like a test run.
No, a bit like a test, yeah.
So I want to give our listeners a chance to hear a little bit about your background. So you grew up in London. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit about growing up, your childhood, your family, and the neighborhoods you lived in?
Sure. I grew up in Chelsea, which is West London. And I come from a very creative family. My parents are both visual artists. I have two sisters and a brother, so quite a big family as well. Everybody has a kind of creative pursuit of their own.
And did you explore London a lot growing up? I mean, it's I lived in New York for a little while. I've never actually been to London, but I would imagine it's a pretty international city. There's a lot of music and stuff going on that you could check out as you're growing up. And
yeah, like, there was a lot going on. Probably didn't start going to like gigs myself until I was like 17 or 18, 16. I'm not sure. And that's why I started like doing open mics as well.
Cool.
It's quite fun for that, because you could just like, there'd be all these different like pubs you could go to and play. It's very big. Like, I think most people in London, when you're younger, you don't move around that much because you're kind of you have your zone and you kind of stick to your area, and like, you don't really know the rest. It's a bit like, you know, in the US, people don't really leave their states.
Yeah. Well, I mean, London's huge and there's all this different areas. But, you know, I always liked getting lost in a big city too. Like, if you're old enough to sort of be safe while you're doing that. I guess, but you started gigging pretty young. Actually, both of my parents were artists as well. So I grew up with like artwork everywhere, art books, art supplies.
What it's like.
Yeah. And I felt so lucky to grow up in that environment. I mean, it's so cool to be exposed to all that when you're young. So when did you start playing music?
I started with piano. I was six, seven. I did like classical piano until I was 18. And then I started learning and writing with guitar when I was like 12 or 11.
Did you have a guitar teacher?
Yeah, I did have a guitar teacher. He was called Dave Kumu. That was my first teacher. He's like actually a very well-known producer, and they have a band called The Invisible. Yeah, I think he's also just like producer and jazz guitarist, and it was great because I just thought he was really cool, but I didn't know obviously
how cool
from school who he was. Yeah, until
yeah.
I mean, he only taught at my school for like maybe a year or two, and then but we reconnected later in the music world.
Yeah. So and this the school you went to, I read that Roots Manuva actually went to that same school. Is that right?
Did he? I have no idea.
I think it was an interview. But your school had an arts program and a music program at that time.
Yeah, it did. It did. I think lots of different people did go. I had a really good arts and music program, but then all the funding got cut. So I had about two like amazing years, and then into a bit more of a regular school, which is a bit boring.
Having that classical training early on probably really gave you a great foundation for writing songs that you're writing now.
Yeah. I think it was like almost seemed to be happening in two different parts of my brain, though, if that makes sense.
Yeah, classical music's really different from like writing music from your own intuition and all that.
Yeah. And it's like, yeah, I mean, it's all music, but reading music.
It's more like math.
Yeah, it's a bit like math, and then trying to play what's on the page. I guess it's not different trying to play what's in your mind, except, for me, writing music was like what it was all about, really. And that's kind of why I wanted to go to this music school. And I had this secret plan to have a band. But luckily, because I had this vehicle of piano, that's what got me in on an audition. So yeah, it was really helpful, and definitely learned a lot about music, learning piano. And it is great to see you see everything in front of you, so you understand the theory a little bit.
Right.
More visually, and I think the guitar is quite abstract. I can't read music for guitar at all. I'm like,
Yeah, it's really tough. Piano also gives you that technique of like having two things going on at once. And when you transfer that over to guitar, it's actually people have said that the similarity between piano and guitar is that there's like you've got all those octaves to work with. And I don't want to get too much into the theory, but music nerds. So you had friends playing in bands, and then at some point you decided to make the step between doing music as a hobby to really going into it seriously. How did that happen?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I was kind of gearing myself up towards that mentally the whole time. I was kind of maybe a bit confused between maybe art or music. And I was like, I don't know if I should go to art school or like try and do music school. I didn't actually go to university, college. I didn't go to I didn't do a degree in music. I didn't really want to, I think. Also, I didn't get in. I think I felt a very urgency between my songs and wanting to get started sooner rather than later. I was also quite shy, I think. So I know I had quite a bit of way to go in developing my confidence.
But you started recording some things and you have a family member who has a studio, right? So you were able to go there and try some things out there?
That's right. Yeah, my uncle, he's my aunt's partner, husband, but I've known him my whole life, so it's my uncle. He's a producer, and they live by the coast in Cornwall. So I would go there a few days, every now and then, or when I was younger and the school breaks, I'd always be trying to get into the studio. And he was very, very supportive and encouraging, and also a really big inspiration of mine, actually.
Hmm. Yeah. Wow, that's really handy to have an uncle, and also that you were able to start recording. So you started putting some stuff out on SoundCloud or Bandcamp or?
Yeah, SoundCloud mostly, I'd say. Yeah. Yeah, and again, because my uncle Joe, because he's a producer, he would do a bit of production on the track, and then I'd kind of hear my ideas come to life in a way which it's harder to get to when you're just like demoing by yourself. So I think it was one of the songs that we did together actually that kind of helped me get like interest from like managers and people like that, because they were like, oh, it sounds, you know, like
sounds good.
sounds shiny, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not quite sure what's right. Call between your sense of humor and your real life. They all say I'm not okay. Such a shame. Never felt so good. They all think I'm someone who's not myself. I'm not myself, but the feeling's good. I stayed up. See them, but I still get scared. They all say I'm not okay. Such a shame. Never felt so good. They all think I'm someone.
Nelu Furiania with Monsters Under the Bed, and that was, I think that was the early SoundCloud demo that her uncle Joseph helped her produce and that she was mentioning, but that ended up on Miss Universe, her maybe second full-length album. She's got a lot of stuff out already after just a few years, really. Very prolific. Want to remind you, you're listening to WRIR LP 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. And we'll continue this interview playing clips of the conversation with Nelu Furiania, as well as at least excerpts of the songs that we discuss. So thanks for listening.
You've got such a unique voice. And I think that's partly what drew me to your music, was your voice and, of course, your guitar playing. How did you develop your singing style?
I think just I didn't really have I didn't think I could sing. I wasn't really a singer for a long time, I think. It wasn't until I was like maybe 15 that I really started, you know, singing my own songs. Or otherwise, I'd kind of just like sing them by myself, but I would never like dream of playing it in front of somebody else or being the singer, you know? Like, so I think it's just using my strengths and then not worrying about my voice not sounding like what my idea of a beautiful voice was. I think for me, the main thing, singing just felt good. So it's like, kind of had to just go with what I thought felt good. And then after a while you start developing like, okay, that sounds good. That doesn't sound so good. Like,
yeah.
Just going and with my strengths.
And knowing your range.
Yeah.
And, you know, exactly. I noticed there's some times where you'll go from like kind of a low register to a higher one. And then, but there's these like overtones that I guess are sort of almost accidental in some ways, but things like your voice does things probably in the moment that sometimes surprise even you when you're recording something.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. I remember discovering like the head voice and being like, oh, like this is a different part of my voice. It sounds different. And especially like in the studio, like and live, so different.
Yeah.
But in the studio, sometimes like we're doing like lots of stacks of vocals, really soft vocals stacked. And then to get that same effect live, it's like almost impossible.
Right.
So I realize when I'm singing live, when I'm playing guitar, it's like a lot more. Sometimes I just feel like I'm shouting and screaming at everybody because it's like a lot more instinctive and kind of like almost like animalistic kind of way of singing. But in the studio, it's like sometimes it's like trying to.
Like you can almost shape it in the studio in different ways.
Yeah.
I'm not afraid to
That's Nila Furiania with I Belong With You, or Belong With You. And that's always a great driving song. Remind you to look out for the stop signs. Sorry. I did listen to that whole album on a late night trip back from D.C. one time with my friend Jerome. And it's pretty cool to listen to that at night driving down the highway. Beautiful sounds there by Nila Furiania. And you're listening to WRIR-LP 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, your daily grassroots global news hour. Tune in weekday mornings 8 to 9 here on WRIR, Richmond Independent Radio.
Welcome back to The Dog Show. Up next, we have Satchmo. Satchmo is a member of the Shelter Pet Group.
That's right, a group known especially for their couch snuggling, ball chasing, face licking, and of course, companionship. Now, let's see him in action.
Look how he makes eye contact with his person.
That's actually known as the treat stare.
How intuitive, and now he appears to be excitedly turning in circles.
Ah, the happy dance so common with this group.
But really, the best way to know an amazing shelter pet like Satchmo is to meet one.
Visit theshelterpetproject.org today. Adopt.
Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Galaxy Girl. Join me Thursday mornings from 6 to 8 a.m. on WRIR for all sorts of great music from across the galaxy. Everything you need to ease you into the waking world before you get that first blast of caffeine goodness. So strap in and join me for the Thursday morning breakfast blend with Galaxy Girl, right here on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
And that's the breakfast blend every weekday from 6 to 8 a.m. And that's Thursday with DJ Galaxy Girl. Thanks for listening to WIR. We'll continue this awesome interview with Nila Furiania here on If Music Could Talk.
So how do you write? Do you come up with the melodies first or the lyrics or the guitar parts? Or I guess it varies.
Yeah, it would usually be guitar parts first. That's kind of how I've always written, like some kind of riff or loop, chords, something to then add a melody to, and the melody kind of comes, you come up with something, and then it feels like maybe there's a sound or a vowel sound there, or like a word that you want to say, and then maybe after her like a few words, like start tying in like a whole sentence and trying to make sense. It's kind of like almost working backwards, and it feels like the song is like hidden in the guitar or in the music or in the vocal line. You just need to like find it. This album, and kind of like the last album, like Mean Will Archer, like my friend and producer, like he's written the music, a lot of the music, and then I've done like the melody and lyrics, and it's been recently quite a different way of approaching it. But again, still the same thing. The guitar comes first and then start building up the song from there. Like I don't think I've ever started with a melody line.
Right. So yeah, there's always the foundation of the music. And then, I mean, you scribble in journals with stuff that you're thinking about and kind of pull from that also.
Yeah. Yeah. I have lots of random writings everywhere.
That's cool. Well, you got this new album, Method Actor, coming out September 13th, and you're on Ninja Tune now. I've been a fan of Ninja Tune for years. So many great artists on that label. Congrats on finishing the album. When did you write the songs for Method Actor, and when did you decide you were ready to go into the studio with Wilma Archer? I read that you finished the tour for Painless, and like you were ready for a break before you wanted to get back to writing. What did you do after that big tour to get back to a place where you wanted to start writing again?
Yeah, I mean, we were touring kind of like for the whole year, I think 2022. So then kind of had like a few months off, really. I went to Hawaii, actually.
Oh, nice.
My boyfriend is like, grew up there, so hung out there for a bit, and then was back in London, and yeah, it was like last spring, like February, no, like March.
Yeah.
Last March, which is spring. Yeah. That's when we started like writing again. It was different from the other albums I've done, because we decided from the start, let's just do it, just us two, nobody else. Like, let's not even play these ideas to anybody. Let's not like get anyone else's opinion. Let's just not make this diluted in any form. Because we felt like on Painless, we'd gotten somewhere, but like, we still had like more, like further to go, and we still could like flesh out and like write more songs and just like make a more cohesive, focused body of work. So it felt good to like have an idea from the get-go of how to approach it.
Yeah, that makes sense. And you guys recorded in three different locations. What was the importance of those different places to you in the creative process? Were they just different studios that had different stuff that you could use, or were the locations important where you want to go outside and see this while I'm working on?
Yeah, I mean, we mainly wrote in London. Like, I had a little kind of semi-studio room, and then he has like a nicer studio room with like more gear. So we'd have sessions like either of those, kind of like every week. And then London can get very can get you kind of bogged down, so and like kind of and also like when you're traveling to and from the studio, and like obviously you have like maybe a day and then a day off and then another day, it feels a bit like disrupted. So in the summer we did like a week in Wales writing. We just like wanted to go somewhere to like focus and maybe like advance some of the songs and like write more songs. And that was really, really useful. Like we came up with a lot of ideas and a lot more songs like came out of that period. And then when we were back in London, and then it wasn't till like we were tracking the vocals and some extra drums and guitar parts that we went to Eastbourne, a studio called Echo Zoo. My drummer just like recommended it, honestly. So we thought we should go down and check it out. So we were there for like 10 days doing like all the vocals.
So you're like really doing these intensive stretches of like a few days at a time, because if you break it up, then you have to like kind of come back and set things up and get all the levels again. And yeah. So you're kind of in the zone for these long stretches, and then you take a little break and come back to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So I think you mentioned in an interview where you were exploring this concept of method acting. Can you tell me more about that and how that resonated with your music?
Yeah. I mean, I wrote it as a lyric, so then I started like investigating it, and just like the whole idea behind no longer acting, like fully embodying the character. And I found that interesting. And like, you're digging up, you know, these like core memories from your life and your past. And I felt like a lot of the songs, well, firstly for method acting, the whole embodying the character rather than acting as a character really connects with that, with music and writing and performing and the way I kind of approach it. I feel like maybe some people tend to like have more of a persona maybe on stage, or a different person on and off stage. Whereas for me, I feel like the reason I find it kind of awkward sometimes is because I'm just having to be myself, like in both these situations. Like I have to be myself on stage and be myself not on stage. And it's kind of, it's tricky. Yeah.
Well, and you're pulling from the same well for both of those things. It's all coming from the same place.
Strong. trickle, aim it at my liver, losing a pulse and all my problems. I love to dance in my new costume, watching the crowd, kicking my jaw. Nothing profound, scared I'm feeling as you're coming around like a washed up cartoon. Stalls it in the back room, since you got promoted. Said you keep it loaded, keeping your power on a bargain just for somebody else to love. Yeah, you can't make this up. Should fall and died in love. Thought I'm needed, and now I'm feeling it's just too strong. And even bad thing is gone.
This song is so powerful. It's got some really gritty guitar parts. The cadence of your lyrics, it's like a real nice flow. Pretty fast lyrics. And I don't want to spoil it for people who haven't seen the video, but I love the moment where you like quickly chug your espresso as an emphasis to the lines that you just sang. Like, okay, I'm done. Like,
that was gonna be, I was gonna be like actor off duty.
Yeah, I got no time for this. I'm out. Like,
I'm out. I did it. It's done. Yeah. Yeah, like undramatically dramatic. But I'm glad you like it. Yeah, that song started with like the kind of ding, 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 and the drum kind of shuffly thing. So Will sent me that idea, and then immediately started coming up with like a melody, like based around the melody line already there. And then the chorus, like, I kind of felt like I was, it reminded me of, what's that Britney's Howard band called again? Alabama Shakes. I felt like I was in that kind of headspace when I was like trying to find the right, because it was like hard to like get a melody in between like such big change.
Yeah.
And it also reminds me of like a lot of like the kind of songs I used to write when I was younger, because it's like I'd always want something totally different to come in at the chorus and really like, right. Oh, chorus is here, like
yeah pretty dramatic again, and like those gritty guitar parts, I feel like you're going even further into like a really rock sound. Like it's going to be great to hear that one live and loud.
Yeah.
And I love the outro of that song too, like the guitar and bass interplay, and then you've got these pedal steel guitar like swells.
Yeah, there's quite a lot of pedal steel layering on the record. It's something Will really wanted to explore. Yeah. We kind of did that at the very end of recording everything else, so it was very like woven into the production. So yeah.
That pops up on other songs of the album too. Some pedal steel.
Quite a few songs. Yeah.
That's awesome. One of my favorite instruments. It's just so, expressive and like haunting and subtle though at the same time. So your sister Molly, right? She helped you with that, or you worked with her on that video as well. Where's that cafe?
It's in Spain. We went to Spain for like a week and shot like all these videos.
That's awesome.
All kind of videos, apart from like I say. So we've got a couple more coming out.
Oh yay! So do you ever have Turkish espresso, like with the cardamom?
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. One of my favorite times, actually, we shot a music video in Turkey, in Istanbul, and that was the best experience. Oh my God.
Oh, which one was that?
So Heat Rises, which was on my first album. So it was a while ago, but you should check out the video because it's very good.
I got to go watch that.
Yeah.
Wow.
A guy's drinking coffee or tea in this.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Oh yeah, the tea also, like there's a special kind of tea, right, that people drink a lot there.
Yeah, it's just a black tea, but it's like it's really good. Two of those and you're like, woo!
Ready to write some songs. You know, music and art can be really great ways to process life experiences. I hear so much nuance and like emotional intelligence in your songs, like some really great thought-provoking phrases in your lyrics, all throughout Painless and also the Miss Universe LP, where you're mentioning like, are you okay? Like, how is your health? Like that thing. There's a real honesty and introspection that I appreciate so much. How does this deep, motivating stuff come to you, like lyrical riddles that I can get new things out of every time I'm listening?
Yeah, I'm glad you realize those things, or you notice that. I think that in a way, it's like they really are like just kind of part of my thoughts, like the lyrics and the phrases. And I think it's for me, at the moment, it's like I feel like I'm definitely getting braver in saying exactly what I think, or like closer to like the actual thoughts or the actual phrases, instead of like trying to shape them into something else, into what I think is a lyric or into what I think sounds better. Kind of like less filtering, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, things can take on different meanings, like even songs. They have connections to times. And so like in that regard, like music, like you were saying with method acting, you've got these like experience and emotions in the songs that can transport you and us to places or feelings. But they do change when you listen to them over time too. So like, I guess your work has probably changed as you've moved on from it in the way that you look at it.
Yeah. Like different songs mean like different things to me now than when I first wrote them. Well, sometimes when I'm on stage, like I'll realize oh, the song's kind of also about like this, or like could be about this thing.
Depending on what's happening in the world at that time, it takes on a different meaning.
Definitely.
And also for all your fans who find meaning in it.
Yeah.
I always love hearing how an artist does a song that you've heard on record and then hearing it live. So what is the difference between recording sessions and playing a live show? And like with the group that you assemble, how do you get those songs, like those rather complex songs, dialed in for a live performance?
It's interesting because it's kind of what I'm focusing on right now, in the midst of rehearsals, getting ready for the tour. In the past, I've tended to go down the route of not worrying about it sounding the same as the record. Just as long as the song is sounding strong and sounding good, then you shouldn't worry too much about it sounding like the record. But recently, now Will, who produced and made the album with me, he's joined the band as another guitarist.
Oh, awesome.
He's like, oh, we've got to make it sound exactly like the record I produced. So,
yeah, and I know how to do that.
Yeah, you have to, yeah, well, that's the thing, yeah. So it's interesting, but there's definitely like a notice like push and pull, because I'm just like, doesn't matter.
right. But you've got like a bunch of, I mean, how big is your band? I mean, I know you've toured with a saxophone player before, or you still do?
Yeah, I've had like pretty much the same band for a while now. So we're all really good friends. We have drums. Ellis plays drums, and Jazzy plays saxophone, but also plays synth and does the vocals. And then Beth does bass. And now we've got Will on guitar, and then I'm playing guitar too. So now that's like, it's cool because it's getting more and more rocky, I think. It was kind of hard to hold down, like you were saying, like all the guitar parts with just one guitar and a bass.
Yeah.
Because we were splitting like the lines onto saxophone, onto keys. So it definitely had a different sound. So I feel like maybe this time it's going to sound a bit more like the record, which is cool.
Yeah. That's great. Wow. I was heading to the beach 2 weeks ago when Call It Love dropped. And so hearing it and seeing it for the first time at the beach felt really serendipitous. I was like waking up every morning for the sunrise, and the dolphins were, going through the morning waves. And then this video comes up, and I'm like, wow. So, the lyrics seem to imply that you're like being pulled or drawn by something. Maybe like it's the tide or the moon. Can you tell me more about the song Call It Love?
Yeah. The thing that I'm being drawn by is, well, it's supposed to be like your inner knowing. So it's like listening to yourself, trusting yourself, letting the things that you already know, like kind of deep inside of you, guide you through this like process, journey, mission, like whatever it is you're doing. And it's also about like letting it kind of overtake you, consume you, and then kind of spit you out the other end. And then you kind of have to start again from scratch. So it's kind of, I always think of it as like a metamorphosis. I always think of like a phoenix, like bursting to flames and being reborn.
Certain call on ashes all a bit still before life.
What is the shame part? Some call it love, I call it shame. What is the shame part, though? Some call it love, I call it shame. In my own journey and like the therapy I've done, like shame can really get in the way in life. It's like this thing that follows us around and we're not always even conscious of it.
Yeah. I've been analyzing that lyric too, because it's a bit weird.
You don't have to explain. You don't have to, like, yeah. I mean,
I'll tell you what I came up with. The kind of conclusion I was like heading towards was like, because I feel like the album and this song has a lot to do with like desire and like longing and like the craving of something. And then some call it love, some call it shame. I was after I wrote it, I was kind of thinking of it about like your loves, your desires, the things that you love. You can also like really easily be ashamed of those things. And you tend to put like a lot of shame on those things, or like be ashamed of the things that you really, really want, like deep inside of you. That's kind of how I made sense of it.